Hello and welcome to this podcast. Yes, I have a voice. My name is Ruth Lewis-Cost and I'm a caregiver and I am blessed to be looking after my elderly parents. I started this podcast to remind ourselves that looking after those in need is a privilege. As unpaid caregivers, we need to have a voice. We need to be able to shout loud and be proud of our status. And caregiving has no age. People of all ages are caregivers. This is my way of supporting you all emotionally and practically with tools from other caregivers on how to find the joy in your situation and make amazing memories. So let's dive into this week's episode. So hello, my friends, and today I'm here with Antrice Hart. Antrice is in Los Angeles, so welcome. And she actually, first of all, she is in global leadership and she's a motivational speaker. So Antrice has been also looking after her mum who has Alzheimer's. Antrice, tell us first a bit about you. Who is Antrice?
Thank you so very much, first of all, for allowing me to be a part of this amazing dialogue. You know, our conversations have always been so inspiring. So to bring them to others is going to be great as well. So who am I? As you mentioned, I do global leadership and develop others to be their best selves in the corporate environment. But also, one of my main things is to be able to inspire and motivate people in the world as a whole. So I love to be able to meet with people and help them to pursue their purpose, really to understand what is it that brings them and sparks joy, and then help them to do that in life as much as possible. So yeah, so that's kind of who I am, is doing that. And I'm a mom. I have three boys. I've been with my husband for 22 years, so excited about that. And I'm a pup mom. I have a dog named Wisdom who is always by my side. And as you mentioned, a caregiver for my mother who is just precious. She's a really beautiful gift.
I love the name of your dog, Wisdom. What a perfect name.
Brilliant. Yeah, and he's really wise. So I have to make sure that I'm sharp because he's a really wise
dog. I love that. So your mom, tell us more about your mom.
So she's been always my greatest cheerleader, my greatest inspiration. She professionally was a social worker for many years. Even at Fort Knox here in America, she worked with the soldiers. So she had a very high profile job. She's been in private practice. So she's influenced others in a lot of amazing ways. And it was a really surprise to see someone of her stature to succumb to this disease. And it's been pretty devastating. However, we're still trying to find ways to make sure that it doesn't take over her life. She still has so much to give, and she's still such a beautiful soul. And I always say about my mom, her name is Elois Sims, always say that she's an essential light. You can't meet her and not walk away better than you were before, even now.
That's incredible. That is just so beautiful. My goodness. Yeah. So how long has she been living with Alzheimer's?
For 10 years now. Once she got diagnosed in, she was 65. So it was early onset. And once she got diagnosed, we noticed it due to repeating things over and over. Her weight really took a dive. She was very small and very frail. And that's one of the highlights that made me say, okay, something's going on. I was living in a different state from her, but visiting her, I started to see that type of decline. But she's been having it. And I would say it did start to take over to go from mild to moderate to moderately severe very quickly over these 10 years.
Yeah. And so who was looking after her if you were in another state?
Yeah, she was on her own. So, and I'll tell you the story of how I found out, Ruth, which was really interesting. As I mentioned before, I was noticing her repeating questions or seeing the same type of stories. The weight change. Well, my father had passed away in 2012. He had cancer, from pancreatic cancer. And we were going to his funeral. I was his caregiver as well. I'm an only child. So, you know, they care for me and now I'm caring for them. And so we were going to his funeral in Michigan, and she drove with her sisters to the funeral from Louisville, Kentucky. And I, at that time, was living in Pittsburgh. So everyone was living in different places. And at the funeral, my aunt, her sister said, you know, your mother's asking the same questions. And because I noticed the same thing too, I'm like, okay, we need to get something checked out. So that weekend, I actually flew to Louisville, Kentucky with her, got a doctor's appointment. They did an MRI, they did a scan, they did an MMSC just to check and see what was going on with her mental abilities. And we noticed that she indeed, at the very least, had mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease for dementia at that point. What actually put the nail in the coffin, as they say, that really solidified is, as I mentioned, she worked for Fort Knox. And in order for her to get to Fort Knox, she didn't drive that long way from where she lived. She would wait in a parking lot area for a van to take her. A really good friend of mine happened to be surveying that area as a security guard. She's never worked that area before. It just so happened. And my mother's car was there in the middle of the night. And so my best friend, her name is Ramada Green. Ramada calls me and says, hey, don't be alarmed. I'm here, but your mom is in a parking lot. And when I asked her why she was here, she says she's waiting on the van. And so that let me know that she just did not understand and have the concept of time anymore. She was so beloved there that they actually removed her duties from doing so much working with adults. She was working with children. So people started to notice things. And at that time, back in 2012, right after my father's funeral, and we got that diagnosis, we got the confirmation. About a month, not even a month, maybe a couple of weeks later, we moved her with me to Pittsburgh. For a long time, she thought she was just visiting, which was fine. She was just visiting. And so we just made it as if she was just visiting, and she's never left. Even when we transitioned from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here to Los Angeles, she's been here with us.
That's lovely. That is really beautiful. It's interesting because my mother also was diagnosed with mild to moderate, or actually just mild, Alzheimer's. And, you know, the doctor said, so it will go so slowly, you'll barely notice it. But of course, in the case of my mother, she did get COVID. So I'm wondering, nobody can prove this, but I do question whether the COVID has actually, you know, sped it up. But the other thing you said about your mother being in a car park, I'm wondering if, like my mother, this is one thing, big thing with my mum, her anxiety. Yeah. And I'm wondering whether your mother, it was actually due to anxiety rather than not necessarily knowing the time of day that she might miss her bus.
You're 100% right. I really agree with that, especially because she didn't want to miss the bus. And because she probably understood that she didn't have a really good concept of time, the anxiety brought her into the middle of the night. And then she was exhausted. Can you imagine? You know, you're there and she's exhausted. So how effective can she even be in her job at that point? But she was really wanting to be there and do the right things. But her anxiety took place there, but I noticed it more as she moved in with us. Again, the change in scenery. You know, she would obsess about specific things, you know, her keys, her car, because she was unable to drive. So she was always wondering where her car was. So I would have to show her her car. But by the time I showed her car, she forgot that it was something that she was even anxious about. She was also anxious about neighbors across the street. And where we live in Los Angeles, there's actually just trees and, you know, woods across the street. So there's really no neighbors, but I had to sometimes visually show her. Or the greatest gift I've learned is to redirect. And so that really took some stress off of both of us, because I don't know if you were like me, Ruth, with the diagnosis, I wouldn't even say argue, but I would state the facts, but those weren't facts to her. And that caused her stress. And it absolutely caused me stress and stress for the family. So redirecting has been a great gift.
Yeah, that's something that I certainly did in the beginning, which was, you know, I would be direct and I'd talk to her as if, you know, she was the same person as she always was and give her the facts. And I'd also, I feel a bit sort of bad when I think back, you know, when she was lying in bed and she hadn't got out, when she still could get out and walk a bit, I would literally say, well, you've chosen it. You know, this is what you've chosen to do, as if it's like, you know, you've chosen your bed, now lie in it, as yeah. the saying goes. And I look back and I think that was awful of me. But that was also showing up my, I suppose, my anger at not understanding the whole thing, because to me, this was not about Alzheimer's at the time. Even though she was diagnosed, it was supposed to be so mild that why would it stop her walking? But what I've connected now, the dots, obviously the fear, because, you know, hospital after hospital visit after hospital visit, they kept saying, oh, you mustn't walk, we're worried about you falling. Oh, you mustn't fall. Oh, this, you can't fall. You know, we mustn't let you fall. We're worried about you falling. Played into her anxiety. And that whole fear has just created somebody who has now given up walking to lie in bed. So it was an external fear. Yeah. And her, obviously, with the Alzheimer's, or with the dementia, as I just call it, because I don't know exactly what they mean by Alzheimer's these days, the dementia has just kind of not really been able, allowed to her to rationalize it and work it out. And I think that's what goes on. So I've learned that you must redirect, absolutely. And you know, when she calls out, either to me if I'm there, or to my father constantly, and you know, help me, you know, where are you, go in and you say, you know, hi, what can I do for you, you know, as if there's no urgency or what have you. And she looks at me as if to say, oh, I don't know. Why was I calling you? She sometimes doesn't even realize she was actually calling me. And in that second, she's forgotten what it was that she wanted. And it's just reassurance, I guess. So I just say, you know, that's fine. It's not a problem. I'm sure you'll remember it a bit later. So it doesn't matter at all.
And it's great, because then you're not bringing that stress into the room, because if she's already forgotten, then you're not elevating that situation, which is so much. You know, it's so interesting, Ruth. You know, I used to work in pharmaceuticals and biotechnology. And one of the disease states I worked in was, I was a trainer for Alzheimer's disease. So I understood all the information about it, how it, you know, originated, just the treatment options, just the whole thing. I never thought that my mother or anyone in our family would have it. My grandmother on my father's side has Alzheimer's, and I saw what that did. And one of the things that it was so devastating to me is that I stopped speaking to her close to the end, because I could not imagine her not remembering me. So now with me being a caregiver of my mom with Alzheimer's disease, it's so interesting that I have to give grace, first of all, to myself, like you're giving grace to you, how you respond, because you're learning, we're all learning. But I also have to give grace to others, because I'm looking at the response of people with my mom now having Alzheimer's disease. Some, you know, deny it. And just think, my mom was a psychotherapist. She knows what it's like to give the MMSC herself to people. But her acceptance of the disease, or even maybe understanding of it, you know, is not there. And then I have people that just want to deny that it's happening, and, you know, at all. Some people want to just assume that she's going to just get better. It's going to get better. It's going to turn around. And very rarely do I have people that accept the fact that she has Alzheimer's. And, you know, I thank God that I have my family, my husband and my children, that are here, that I've totally accepted. This is, mom is a part of our life, and this is what our life has become as caregivers together. Because as an only child, it's really difficult to be able to find the support you need, but also give grace to everyone around you and how we accept what's happening and the changes that are happening in our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And in your case, the fact that your mom is so young,
yes,
it's even harder for people to accept, because it's not the norm. I know. I do often mention my sister, whose husband in his early 60s was diagnosed also with Alzheimer's, but it clearly is not Alzheimer's the way it's absolutely happened. She was, you know, directed to various clubs and groups to help her, to help him. And every single one of them only dealt with people 80 plus. There was nobody dealing with anybody of, you know, he was 60. How old was he now? I think he was 62 64 when it was diagnosed, but it was obviously there beforehand. And he's, you know, 6 years on, almost 6 years anyway, he's now at end of life. He's 69 actually at the moment. He's at end of life, and the way it's happened has not been Alzheimer's, or it's a strain of Alzheimer's that nobody's, and that's the thing with Alzheimer's, isn't it? People just blanketly say it's Alzheimer's, but there are zillions of different types and affects people in different ways. My mother doesn't actually notice, I think, that she forgets things, or she's not that aware of what's happening to her, other than she's just lying in bed and not doing anything, not taking interest in anything. She doesn't watch television anymore. She doesn't read. She loves it when I read to her. I sometimes put Alexa on for her, the, you know, the Amazon
thing. Yeah.
And I put it onto a radio station where it's playing sort of older music, and she enjoys that. She's, I think, enjoys looking at photographs. So she enjoys a few things, but she's sedentary.
Yeah.
She's not active and taking part. It's always somebody coming to her to do that. And that lack of interaction, which of course was also brought on anyway by all the various lockdowns and things.
Yeah.
She's a very sociable person. And she always hated not being not having something to look forward to. And so that has added into it. So that's not really the dementia. That is her personality coming. Yeah. Alzheimer's, you know, they, as I say, it's a blanket name, and it's just different for everybody. And they've diagnosed my father with mild, or actually he had mild to medium, a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, but he is far more alert and capable. And what happens with him is certainly he's forgotten people's names. He hasn't forgotten who they are, but he's forgotten their names.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes he, you know, he forgets my name and then calls my mother my name. It all gets very complicated. So again, I say to him, look, it really doesn't matter. I know who you're talking about, so do not worry about it. But he's aware that at times he gets confused, but he's aware of it. That's a huge difference.
Absolutely.
So, but they are in their 90s. And in some ways, you know, both their diagnosis, I guess, is more like just senile dementia, as it used to be called, rather than anything else. You know, for your mum and other people in that age group, there's something much more that's behind it.
Yes. And I was looking at her life, you know, like I said, she was very active mentally. But as far as sedentary, you know, she just didn't do a whole lot of other things, like exercising, things like that. However, she still lived an active life. She had so many girlfriends, you know, she loved to bowl, you know, she loved to dance, she loved concerts. So we try to do things that she loved to do still now. So like we have Wii bowling. We don't go necessarily to the bowling rink now, but we do Wii bowling, and she just talks smack the whole time. I'm gonna get you. Her personality still comes out like, I'm going to win. So we do the Wii bowling on the video games. She does that. We still dance. And I think that's probably where we got introduced. So if you start seeing a video of my mom and I dancing together. She loves music. So we try to find ways to still make sure that she has a life, even with the label of Alzheimer's, because as you mentioned, she is young. And I took her to a Greek festival recently, and we just walked around outside. And so I had to learn as a caregiver also not to apologize or be embarrassed, you know, by sometimes her behavior. The good thing about my mom, I will say, with her expression of the disease, is that she's really loving. So she will see people and strangers and just tell them that she loves them. She'll want to hug them. And so I have to kind of look at them and almost say, like, look at me, like, you know, something's going on here. Or people will automatically know, like, you know, they'll look at me, you know, saying, we understand, it's okay. Some people, not so much, but either way, she is still trying to find a way and find her way in this new situation that she's in.
Yeah. It's actually interesting. And as I was trying to say, I suppose, is that everybody has it differently, and it affects everybody differently. And one thing I actually miss hearing you talk about your mum dancing and socializing, that was my mum. And that's what kind of upsets me, that she's in bed. And I really, my desire is that she learns to be out of bed a bit, because she loved dancing, she loved music, she loved being around people, and she needs that. And she absolutely, and I feel that if she could be around people more, she might actually find some more pleasure in life rather than just lying there staring into space. And you know, just, I don't know what she's thinking, maybe of her life, but she's just staring into space, doing nothing. And that hurts.
It does. And my heart goes out to you. I may have shared, you know, before how it got to a point with my mom where we could not care for her in our home at the end of last year. And so we moved her into a facility, and you were saying there are resources, and I'm confident that there will be a resource for your mom, Ruth, too, that will be able to provide a place, you know, now that where my mom is now, she's really close, which is great. So I can see her. I moved her from one place to another. So I can see her often, but, you know, she's making crafts again and she's around people. But there are people there that aren't able to move, but they move them in a wheelchair and bring them into the group. So at least they are able to be there together and they're playing music. So, you know, it does touch everyone in a different level, but I'm confident that your mom's going to have something as well that she can kind of inspire her.
Yeah, I agree. You know, yes.
She'll have that. And I'll tell you, speaking the time, you know, a couple of years, right before everything, the pandemic and everything shut down, I was talking to one of my cousins who's like a sister, Terry Sims, and she was saying, you know, I was telling her how much my mom loved Paris. And I was sharing with you how the disease started to go really rapidly. And I'm like, she's always wanted to go to Paris. I had to do this before she's like literally not able to go. You know, we were waiting for retirement, you know, and sometimes now we're saying that we can't wait. Don't wait for the jewelry you want to wear. Don't wait for as much as you can do it. Try to do things as much as you can as soon as possible. But for my mom, I was talking to my cousin and she's like, you know, you probably should take her. And I'm like, I agree. So in 2019, before everything blew up, I did get a chance to take her to Paris. And the greatest thing, Ruth, was she had about 4 moments where she understood truly where she was. And she was just thrilled. Like I said, Mom, guess where we are? She's like, where? And I'm like, Paris, France. She's like, oh my gosh. And she'd look around and, you know, and so it would be moments. But in those moments, they were just such life-changing, you know, to be able to have her experience that, even though she might not always remember it. I think just her being there and having that presence and having a dream fulfilled was worth it. It really was. I remember even when we walked into the hotel room, she actually knelt down and started to pray and have a silent moment of appreciation and gratitude. And I just stood there and watched her in silence because I knew that she knew something was different. You know, something special was happening to her. And I'll tell you, one of the things that really just makes me tear up on the flight home, you know, she looks at me because she doesn't always know who I am, but she appreciates a nice lady coming to see her. So I said, whatever happens, I'm just going to be a nice lady that comes to see her. And so I'm sitting next to her on the flight and she turns to me and she says, you know, I really would love for you to meet my daughter. And I said, I would love to meet her. And she says, yeah, she's so nice. And she likes to do fun things like you. You like to do fun things too, I can tell. She says, I just think you guys will be really good because I really like you. And I just love her so much. And so it just showed me just, I don't know, it just meant so much to know that she raised someone that she loves. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, it was just a great moment. So that whole trip was beautiful from start to finish.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I'm smiling. Nobody can see me, but I'm really smiling because that just warms my heart. Wow. And one thing I have again noticed in the sort of little amount of connection I've had with people with dementia, or maybe particularly Alzheimer's, I don't know, I'm not an expert, is that one thing that I feel, even if they forget the person, the name, where they are, the one thing that remains are their feelings.
Yes.
They know if they love someone. So even if they can't remember who that person is, they know they're connected through love.
It's so true.
And that's so warming.
It is. One time I saw my mom recently, you know, we're having the masks And she saw me, and the people were excited for her to see me, thinking that she would remember. And, you know, at that moment, she didn't. But then they said, move your mask down. And I pulled my mask down, and she said, that's me. So even the fact that she reflected herself in me, but you're so right. I think it's Maya Angelou that had a quote that mentioned that, Ruth, where you might not remember certain things, but you always remember how people make you feel.
Yes.
And, you know, love, it just lasts. You know, that love is something that's beautiful. And my heart goes out, and I feel for those people that have people that are suffering from Alzheimer's in their life, and they don't have this. You know, my mom is really loving, but, you know, we have patients that are combative and, you know, turn their back on you. And that is really difficult as well. So as a caregiver, you know, I've really leaned on resources from other people, having conversations like this. Alzheimer's Association has been great. I've cried in my car, you know, I've called them, but that redirecting and just going into their world as much as possible has been a godsend, because it does not have to, we don't have to draw them into our world. If they want to, you know, go change the baby, let's go find the baby to go change the baby. If they have to go to work, or they're going out and so they need to find a lip, we give them lipstick so they can go out, you know, because usually they don't even remember once you give them the lipstick what it's for, but at least it allows us to go into their life. And again, you know, there's different ranges and just finding how you can show up as a caregiver in those different ranges and alleviate some of that stress and working and loving on the people that we care for.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't say anything more than that. So I know that, you know, we started this whole conversation. I want to kind of bring it full circle because you said you were a motivational speaker.
Yes.
What is it you speak about?
Thank you for asking that. You know, the main thing is about this life and how to live it fully. So I have shared with you offline how I've won cars on game shows, and my son has won a car on a game show, and I've cliff dived, I've skydived, you know, I've, you know, just had amazing things that happened in my life. And people will say, like, how did these things happen to you? And so what I teach and I try to inspire people to do, whether it's one-on-one or in large groups or corporately, is to find out what brings you joy, show up, and make it happen. You know, there's so many books and there's so many resources that talks about once you start to move towards the things that is your purpose, you know, the things that you're good at, the things that you enjoy doing, and that's going to bring service to the world. That's really where that purpose is. And once you find that, let's continue to work together to pursue that so that you can fully live your life. We have one life to live. And so it's so important that we find the joy that we can every single day to make sure we're living it to the fullest. And the most way we can do that is how we also give our gifts and service to others. And as a caregiver, that's one of the main ways that we give our gift, which is of love and care to others.
Absolutely. I know that there are two human needs. It's growth and contribution. Exactly what you were saying about finding your purpose, and that's the growth.
Yes.
When it feels right, you know it's right. And then the contribution is absolutely whoever we can help. And yes, helping our loved ones if they're in the, you know, this situation is part of the contribution.
Absolutely. We don't want to be stagnant. Everything is changing all the time, right? Tides are always moving, the world's always turning. And like you said, we want to continue to grow and elevate ourselves and ascend. And as we do that, like you said, we're growing, we can help to contribute to others doing the same thing. There's no greater joy, no greater joy.
On that note, this is a perfect time to end this interview because absolutely, you know, exactly as you said. So, Antrese, thank you so much for joining me today. I hope everybody has got something out of this, even one thing. The redirect for me was an amazing sort of eye-opener.
Yes.
And whoever you are looking after, whatever you know, the reasons why you're looking after, whether it's Alzheimer's or something else, it is just so, I think, eye-opening to know and to learn how you can best or how we can best serve them and not make it about ego. That was the other thing I quickly wanted to say, because often we go in and we're because we're hurting, Therefore, we're making it about us and how we feel. We forget about how they feel. It's and so we have true. To almost drop that so-called ego and think of them.
And that, I'll say that the last thing I'll say too is in self-care, because it's not easy. So just making sure we're taking the time to meditate, to pray, to step away, you know, to breathe. And like you said, to give ourselves grace as we're giving grace to them, because we have to care for ourselves as we're caring for others.
Absolutely. And Therese, thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. And don't forget, if you like this episode, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave me a 5-star review. It really helps. See you next time.